Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Make March Madness a moneymaker with MyBookie. Getting started is easy. Visit MyBookie online and use promo code ZABE to receive a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Grab your extra funds now and for a limited time, claim a free entry into the $150,000 MyBookie Madness Bracket Contest for a chance at the big money. If you're the type of guy who likes to fill out multiple brackets to get an advantage, you can do that too. The price of entry is less than an Uber, all for a shot at life-changing amounts of moolah. With so many brands to choose from, you need a platform that makes it simple to bet and simple to win and simple to get paid, like MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Today on the ZabeCast, the triumphant return of Hall of Famer Ed Reed's Greek-White adopted brother, Glenn Yunus. We'll talk about the Carlos Correa contract and who the hell buys an NBA team without even a single championship for $4 billion? All that plus my essential three Christmas songs as we approach the big day. Your 35-minute dose of uncensored me is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go!
Here we go!
Thursday, December 22nd, 2022. Thank you very much for downloading. Before we get into everything here, including my friend Glennie coming on the podcast today, Franco Harris has passed away at the age of 72. He died overnight in his sleep. No cause of death at this time. But Franco Harris was a living legend in NFL circles. Super Bowl champion, as well as the man at the center of the most controversial play in NFL history, voted the most iconic play in NFL history by NFL Films, the Immaculate Reception. This just 2 days before the 50th anniversary of that play, which was on December 23rd, 50 years ago. And 3 days before the Raiders and Steelers will play in Week 16 on Christmas Eve on national TV on just a day after the anniversary. There's going to be a lot that comes together in this game on Christmas Eve. And it's kind of a neat Christmas present. Now, it's obviously very sad that Franco Harris has passed away, but I think that's going to add an extra element to all the remembrances of this play on television. That said, I had to refresh my memory just a bit on the play, because here's how it sounded back in the day.
Last chance for the Steelers. Bradshaw trying to get away, and his pass is broken up by Tatum. Tipped off! Franco Harris has it! And he's over! He grabbed it with 5 seconds to go and scored.
Let's watch this again.
1 million to 1 odds on this one.
Ricochet out there off of Jack Tatum and into the man of the year, Franco Harris's hands.
So that made the game, the final score is 13-6 Steelers. They advanced in a playoff game. Playoffs in December? Yes, the NFL season was shorter at 14 games, and yeah, they would routinely play playoff games in December. It also launched the start of a bitter rivalry between Al Davis and the Rooney family of the Steelers for a lot of different reasons. One being that the Rooneys were, of course, NFL blue blood, and they had taken one for the team to move to the AFC when the AFL merged with the NFL. And that was seen as something that was like, look, we don't want to do this. We don't want to move to this other neighborhood with these jabroni teams and cities that have joined the mighty National Football League. But the Steelers, being good league citizens, did just that. The Rooney family did. The Raiders and Al Davis were public enemy number one to the Shield. And so therefore, that added an extra layer of sizzle and spice to this rivalry. Now, the dumb thing about the Immaculate Reception is it was only a controversy because there was a rule in place at the time that if an offensive player touched the ball on a passing play, he was the only guy allowed to catch it unless it was touched by a defensive player or there was simultaneous touching. Why this was ever a fucking rule, nobody knows. But it's a good reminder of what we still need to keep doing with the NFL rules, like this McLaurin fiasco from this week. Get rid of the rules that make no sense, add no value, or are just too hard to administer. Maybe they thought back in the day, well, we can't have crazy tip passing plays where you throw it to one guy and he goes, boop, and he tips it to another player. That's all teams will do. They'll make a mockery of the game. That was the rule, and so then it became, well, did Frenchy Fuqua, the running back who was intended for, touch the ball alone, or did Jack Tatum go ahead and hit the ball with his chest? Because the ball flew back big time. It flew back almost, 15 yards, 10 yards at least. And reading the Wikipedia page, that over the years there were like professors that tried to set up experiments saying there's no way that Fuqua himself could have ricocheted the ball that far backwards without the help of the onrushing Tatum with the hit. And of course, there's no really good angle that shows it per se, and the resolution of television back then was so bad that it really wasn't clear. The iconic shot of Franco Harris scooping the ball up right before it hit the ground was done by NFL Films, a low end zone camera shot that in glorious slow motion lives on to this day. Of course, the Steelers did not win the Super Bowl that year, even though they advanced. They lost to the Dolphins, who finished their perfect season that year and became Super Bowl champs. But the Steelers were then on their way, winning four Super Bowls in the next however many years. And Franco Harris, of course, was a huge part of it. Franco Harris still, until his death, he was still a part of and welcomed and beloved by the franchise, not so much Terry Bradshaw. Now, for my Steeler fan listeners, I'm sure you'll send me a quick note via email to say, well, here's where and why Terry got sideways. And there may be with, Yinzer Nation, a feeling of either this is wrong, they need to make this right, or fuck Terry Bradshaw. Seriously. He's the one that's got a problem, not the Steelers. But Franco Harris, rest in peace. And another element of Franco Harris's post-playing career was the fact that at the height of the Joe Paterno scandal involving what did he or did he not know about Jerry Sandusky, he supported his college coach, because he played at Penn State, Joe Paterno, to the hilt. And it was a very lonely place to be for him. And he was derided as a bit of a nut and a kook. And I might have said some of the things myself. Now, I have since changed my mind on this to a large degree because I have listened and I have read and I have absorbed and I have said, wait a minute. Okay, I see now where I don't think Joe Pa really knew what was happening. I thought he got bad intel, murky intel at best, from Mike McQuarrie. And so therefore, he really didn't know what was going on. I believe that. I listened to John Ziegler's podcast with the benefit of hindsight, He's been a guest on this podcast a couple times. I would have him on again, but he seems to be so polarizing. Some of you hate him so much. And I will admit that I love John. I love what he does. But his sort of raspy Bob Odenkirk voice and the way he is always like frantically pleading, like, I can't believe this in my face. You know, he has a hard time of just, okay, relax, just talking normally like this. It's a bit like, a bow saw cutting sheet metal at times with old Ziegler. If I could get him to calm down and slow down and talk in this kind of a tone more often than what he does, it'd be an easier listen. But I do recommend the podcast because there was a massive rush to judgment that I am embarrassed I got swept up in that wanted to say, oh, they knew it all along. The dirty, soulless athletic behemoth of Penn State University and Joe Pa sweeping under the rug, a known pedophile coach because winning was all that mattered. It was a story too good to not be true in a way. It was too juicy to say, I don't know. I don't think that's the case. I think Joe Pa didn't really know what happened. And I think he tried to handle it the way he thought he should. It just got sideways quickly. There was, by the way, a ton of perverse incentive to go with the narrative that Joe Pa knew and everything else. Now, Ziegler believes that Sandusky is innocent. And this is based on the fact he smuggled a pen with a recorder in it into state prison to interview Sandusky at pretty significant legal risk because it was illegal to do so. And I respect that hustle. I can't say I'm there yet in terms of believing that Sandusky is innocent. There's just too much weirdness all around to not believe it. And, you know, pedophiles are unfortunately a real awful thing in life and society. But I'm now more convinced than ever that Joe Pa just was at the receiving end of a rush to judgment, a narrative that got too big too quick, and there was too many incentives to not go with that narrative. From Penn State and what they're going to have to pay out to the victims and to others, from some of the claimed victims who really didn't have much of a compelling story that came forward and said, ah, me too, because look, there's lots of money involved. Penn State was going to open up the coffers to settle it. But anyway, rest in peace, Franco Harris. Make March Madness a moneymaker with MyBookie. Getting started is easy. Visit MyBookie online and use promo code ZABE to receive a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Grab your extra funds now and for a limited time, claim a free entry into the $150,000 MyBookie Madness Bracket Contest for a chance at the big money. If you're the type of guy who likes to fill out multiple brackets to get an advantage, you can do that too. The price of entry is less than an Uber, all for a shot at life-changing amounts of moolah. With so many brands to choose from, you need a platform that makes it simple to bet and simple to win and simple to get paid, like MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. You know, we're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. This according to a recent Indeed survey. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Just go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the show by saying you heard about it right here on this podcast. Indeed.com/Zabe. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All right, let's talk about this $4 billion purchase of the Phoenix Suns and Carlos Correa getting paid by the what? The Mets? I thought he was going to the Giants. Glenn Yunis time.
The Zabecast.
Glennie boy, what's shaking, my brother?
Just the holiday blues, my friend.
How can you be blue when you sent me a photo of your beautiful bride and your two beautiful daughters? Come on, man.
Blue. I'm not blue. I'm pumped. You know okay. me.
But you're saying that Mrs. G is stressed.
No, I would never do that. But I think that women in general at this time of year are definitely feeling the mental load. This is what I was at. By the way, happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Kwanzaa, all the other stuff, all the atheists, happy December.
No, we don't wish atheists December. Anything.
Or Jehovah's Witness, because they don't celebrate.
Oh, really?
Oh, a quick aside.
Yes, sir.
My phone rang the other day. I'm at the office. I go, hello, this is Glenn. Hi, Glenn. I'm so sorry for this random call out of the blue. My name is Bob Smith. I'm from, Joe's Printing Factory. We do all the promotional items. Was wondering who handles that in your office. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. My business partner is a Jehovah's Witness and he doesn't believe in that stuff. Thanks so much for the call. Click. I'm like, where did that come from? Such a great just hazing of these telemarketers.
Oh, wait, but that's not a telemarketer. That's a guy trying to sell printing services.
That's fair. He was trying to sell promotional products, and I was mean to him. Sorry.
And you were using a
religious, I don't even have a business partner.
You were using a religious sect as cover to clown a guy. Yeah. Shame on you.
Maybe that's why everyone hates me.
No, I think it's a variety of reasons, but I don't hate you. It's good to talk to you. So we got money stuff to talk about here, Mr. Money Man, since you are a man who knows about athletes and money. First of all, Carlos Correa, $315 million from the Mets after the Giants were going to pay him more, but there was a medical issue. And according to the story, they tried to work it out. They had different opinions on the nature of the medical issue. But Scott Boras said, okay, fine, I'll go find almost as much money from another team. And he found it in Steve Cohen. Their payroll now, payroll is going to be over $500 million. It'll be the highest payroll in baseball history. Your thoughts?
He's probably not making any money on that team, but he's might not be losing much. And so a couple things speaks to the fact, if you're a New York Met fan, you are in love with Steve Cohen. Finally, you got someone who's going to belly up and say, screw it.
Spend whatever like the Yankees.
Spend like the Redskins. I mean, well, actually that was like the Redskins, not the Commanders. Yeah. Spend like the Yankees, spend like whomever. And so they're pumped. Who cares? Pitchers, let's get them all. How old? Doesn't matter. Correa, maybe injured, maybe not. Let's bring him in. Who cares?
Right.
The second part is it speaks to how much money there is in baseball in general in the top markets, obviously, the top market. And third, it speaks to an owner who's like, you know what? If I got to take a $100 million write-off this year, so be it. I have the tax appetite anyway. Because what we have to understand is guys with that type of net worth are always looking for offsets of taxes. So you take a loss in one business, you take a gain in another, they can offset in general terms. So like it doesn't really, he'd rather give it to Correa and have a shot to give it a go than give it to Uncle Sam. And I'm not diving into the guy's finances, I don't know, but I'm just giving you an idea of why right. somebody like that might spend that kind of money and might take a loss on the team.
Okay, so is he making money, quote unquote, on an annualized basis of dollars coming in, dollars going out on the Mets? The answer is almost certainly no.
Probably not. Right.
But assets equity. Like baseball teams right. or major sports franchises, I've right. yet to see one sell for less than it was that's bought right. for. Have you?
Yeah, and if you don't need, that's correct. And if you don't need, and not off the top of my head, and if you don't need the cash flow, Dan Snyder does need the cash flow. He's a poor owner in Baltimore, listen right. to me, in Washington. And like Steve Cohen doesn't need the cash flow, then you're okay to play the learners with the Nationals. You're okay to play the long game of this asset's going up. This is an equity buy for me. I'm buying this. I'm going to play some baseball. And 1 year I make money, 1 year I lose money, whatever, doesn't matter. Big picture, this asset is growing for me. So most owners are down for that. It's what do you call it? Not a community. What are they? It's a trust. You know what I mean? It's a national trust type deal where, hey, I'm doing this for the greater
asset,
good of
basically.
Civic trust. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Fuck all that. It's still a business at the end of the day. It's still major financial investments. And you say write off. Did you hold on? Did you say write off?
You don't even know what a write off is.
Here.
Oh, hey, you got it. What happened to my stereo? It's all smashed up.
That's right. Now it looks like it was broken during shipping, and I insured it for $400.
But you were supposed to get me a refund.
You can't get a refund. Your warranty expired 2 years ago.
So we're going to make the post office pay for my new stereo now?
It's a write-off for them.
How is it a write-off?
They just write it off.
Write it off what?
Jerry, all these big companies, they write off everything.
You don't even know what a write-off is.
Do you?
No, I don't.
But they do. And they're the ones writing it off.
You know,
it's so good.
The brilliance of Michael Richards there, who sadly immolated his entire career in one bad moment on stage with a heckler while he was doing stand-up post-Seinfeld with the N-bomb a million times. His facial acting there and the way he digs into that scene, and I'm wondering how much of that was written by Larry David and the writers, but the funny thing is, as Jerry is properly challenging him, that you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. He gets more serious, he gets quieter, and he leans in with a tone that says, listen, they know. They're the ones writing it off.
It's gold. It truly, like, you know, gold, Jerry, it's gold. I mean, he is brilliant. All that show is brilliant.
So put aside
ad-lib. You can't write that shit.
Probably. I think it's half written, half ad-lib.
That's right.
Put aside the Cohen angle of it. So you're Correa. Yeah. You now have a mountain of money. You know this, you know, knowing Ed Reed and his foundation and athletes with money, not to that extent, but still.
But yeah.
How do you think athletes handle a sudden mountain of money like that?
Their agents, generally speaking, if they haven't put in place already, have recommended a financial advisor who has then a business manager. Because, okay, so there's a couple layers of financial, you know, you need a fiduciary. Someone who's, and at his level, he's already hopefully has somebody who manages his day-to-day bills and his finances. So he doesn't see his cell phone bill. He's not paying his mortgage. He's not writing a check. It's not coming out of his, you know, checking account. That's already.
Carlos Correa doesn't pay bills.
I would guess that he doesn't.
He pays a guy or a gal to pay his bills.
Yeah. His financial advisor or his fiduciary has a secretary, an admin that part of their yearly and annual checkup and all that. They go through all the bills. They have it on autopilot. They have an account that they fill for that, or an account that transfers in to pay those things. It's on autopilot. Someone manages it, looks at it every quarter. You know, the bills come to an office, not their house, generally speaking, or duplicates go to an office. It's basically they set up access for a third party person, a human being that manages that day to day, and they're not writing checks monthly. It's on autopilot.
All right, but don't you then, with the more people though in your financial kitchen, isn't there
more hands in the cookie jar? No doubt.
Well, that's the thing. Don't you need people to watch the people?
You do. You do. And you're paying for all of them, and mostly they're outsiders.
So at some point, it'd be smart if you're an athlete to get maybe one or two guys
Who's policing the police is the question.
Right. One or two guys that you keep a sharp eye on.
That's
right. And you actually roll your sleeves up and maybe do pay a couple of bills like a normal Joe citizen, because then you are now involved in your own finances.
Logically, yes, but they're beyond that.
But it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't matter. And also, it's sort of like the cost of doing business. Like, there's not – generally, by the way, you hear all these stories about guys getting robbed. There's a lot of people that don't have their shit buttoned up.
Of course.
And if there's leakage, like, okay, someone steals $2 million from him. Like, you know. Is that worth it for him to have the peace of mind? I mean, I'm saying this, this is a bad comment. But the guy needs to focus on baseball so he can make $300 million. If someone steals $2 million, he was able to focus on baseball to get $300 million. Net, he's winning. Like, whatever.
Because
these guys don't pay their bills. They don't pay their real estate taxes. Next thing you know, their house is foreclosed, even though they didn't know it. And it's not foreclosed.
It makes TMZ. It's like Carlos Correa, $350 million contract, and he's a deadbeat because he didn't pay his property taxes.
He doesn't know how to pay his property taxes, and then it went into foreclosure and someone bought it at auction for 3 cents on the dollar, and he missed his opportunity to buy it back because they give you a big grace period. You know what I mean? Like, that's real.
No, you're right on that. And can I just quick aside? I never know fully whether or not my shit's buttoned up on property taxes, because it's like, oh, the new mortgager should have sent it to, you know, the county, and they should be the ones to pay it. But don't worry, one call will get it straightened out. Or it's like, well, the tax base changed or the rate changed, so you were actually in arrears a little bit. But don't worry, we'll roll it into next year's, and we'll just keep it going through the bank and the mortgager or mortgagee. No, I'm the mortgagee. Yeah. They're the mortgager.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, that's right. So, but here's you'll.
So athletes don't want to deal with all that, and they've got multiple properties and tons of cars and personal assistance and tax liability. Every state they play in, they play two games in Florida versus two games in New York, and the difference is astronomical in taxes.
That's right. And hopefully the team sorts that in their W-2 and it comes out that way. But some of these guys have entities and they get paid through their entity. I mean, that's a whole thing.
Right. But then hopefully they got a write-off. They can find a write-off.
It's a write-off here.
So basically for a sport.
It's a business inside the business.
Right. For a sport that's dying, baseball. There sure is a lot of money still in a sport that's dying. Never quite seen that. Maybe baseball isn't as dying as people think.
Yes and no. So the demo's getting older, no doubt, but where they're still making a lot of their money is on regional sports networks, which are sort of past their prime, but not dead yet.
They're not dead yet. The RSN model is in real
dying.
Trouble. Real trouble.
So the second part of that is MLB, and this goes back about 10 years. MLB was the first one to really launch their MLB.com and their streaming and their app and all that stuff, and it was revolutionary. And the technology was so good that they actually ran the back end, nerd.com right here. They actually ran the back end for the WWF and for the masters.com and for the NCAA tournament for CBS. And they ran all kinds of back end. And it was a huge boon for them. Big, big money to each team. It was tons. ESPN bought in, I don't know, 5 years ago at like $1 billion. And they actually sold the technology all into ESPN a couple years ago. But MLB.com made and still makes with their subscription model a ton of money for the teams in the league. And that, with the still alive but dying regional sports networks, is why there's money still in baseball and just the vast amount of games at scale, even though ticket sales are a small portion. It's going to come to an end at some point. How long? Not sure. Right now, Steve Cohen's got enough money to figure it out.
What's going to come to an end?
The regional sports networks and traditional cable and things like that.
Are you saying $300 million contracts for ball players are going to come to an end?
That's a good question. I don't have that answer.
I mean, if you had been
at some point, you'd think they'd level out, but I would have thought that 10 years ago.
20 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, it just shows no signs of stopping. So
it's really actually incredible when you think about it like that, as we just broke that down. Like, 10 years ago, you're like 20, and it's like, shit, you're right. Because I when I was on the air, I would talk about the sports bubble bursting. At some point, this bubble's got to burst.
Yeah, I know.
It's never – it's – it
hadn't yet.
No.
Hadn't yet, and I'm not sure it's going to anytime in the future. Now, baseball is in an interesting spot because they've got runaway franchises with billionaire owners spending through the roof, and then you've got a number of teams that not only are they small markets and not only do they have small payrolls, they are pretty much actively flipping the bird at even trying to compete. They don't even make a pretense of it, and they know they're still going to get
We'll just take our rev share and keep it moving.
Rev share, they're going to get X million people that come to the ballpark, if for no other reason than it's a beautiful thing to do in the summer, have a beer with your dad, and maybe see another team that is trying to win it
That's right.
And they're just going to bump along that way. Now, I heard one interesting angle to this about, you know, they can't really force any more parity economically because the small markets are never going to spend anywhere close to the Steve Cohens and the Mets and all that. But the one way they can induce parity without any real pain or objection is what they've done with expanded playoffs. With expanded playoffs, now the littles have a chance to sneak into the party. And then if they're in October, these series are so quick and so short sample sized, they can do some damage and go to the World Series.
That's right. And, well, you know, the other thing about the haves and the have-nots, and, you know, maybe baseball's a window into pure dirty capitalism, maybe. But I'll tell you what my father told me growing up. You know, like a famous line from my dad, and it sort of level sets you. It's, the world needs ditch diggers, too. And, like,
that
baseball
was
needs
not
ditch
from
diggers
your
too.
Dad. I that mean, was from Caddyshack.
I didn't say he made it up. I just said that's what he would say to me.
He really said the Judge Smales line, well, the world needs ditch diggers, too.
He would say that to me often because there's a level for everything and everyone. You know, and like math nerds are going to get upset at this, but he would say, you know, like half the world's below, half the people in the world are below average. You're like the average versus the mean versus the median. Forget all that. It gives you an idea of like, hey, not everyone's the same, right? There's a hierarchy of people and things and abilities and teams and where you want to put your energy and emotion, whether it's football or baseball or owners, whether the payroll. So, you know, that while I understand what you're saying is like, there's team slipping the bird, not spending money, give me my rev share and sort of like whatever ticket sales because it's nostalgia and people are going to go to the games. Oh, well, you know, the lead needs ditch diggers too. You know, there's going to be a last place in the middle and a first. That's just what it is.
Well, that is definitely true. And the thing about spending all this money is it absolutely 100% does not guarantee the Mets do any better next year than they did this year, which was good, but not great.
Right. But also if you are worth X amount of billions of dollars, like, you know, it's next level gambling. It's your own, as we talked about, it's your own personal fantasy team.
But I would say it's not even gambling because NFL, all these major franchises, they don't sell for less. The worst you're going to get hurt is a little bit. You're not going to go broke. Now, there's one exception as we pivot to the other big financial story in sports, and that is the Phoenix Suns selling to a young guy by the name of Matt Ishbia, who played at Michigan State, was a bench scrub there, loves basketball. He runs this major mortgage conglomerate. He apparently got into the business. His dad founded the company. It's done very, very well. And he spent $4 billion for the Phoenix Suns in market number 11. There is not a single trophy in their case as a pedigreed franchise, no championships for them. And it's way too much money, way too much money. And especially considering the fact he's only worth $5 billion.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay, so I may have this wrong, but my understanding is he bought 50% of the team and what he kicked in makes the team valued at $4
billion. Oh,
so
okay. If that's the case, then check, okay, so he's only in for $2 billion. I don't know. I could look it up.
But again, when I heard the Redskins on debt, he can buy this stuff on leverage. You know, you can get a loan for this stuff.
Here's my problem, Glenn. And again, something is only worth what anyone is willing to pay for.
That's right.
If the Broncos, the Denver Broncos,
right,
pedigreed NFL team, if they sell for $4.65 billion or whatever it was, there's no way on earth the fucking Phoenix Suns, even with their awesome gorilla mascot dunking off trampolines, should be worth $4 billion. No fucking way.
I agree.
How? Why?
I agree.
Make sense to me. I don't get it.
Okay, I'll tell you why. China China.
As Trump would say, China. You gotta remember, China. Go ahead.
No, go Asia, ahead. China, the Orient. Are we allowed to say that?
That term is out of fashion, my friend.
I actually heard Asia.
The
human
Far
person,
East, Asia. Don't say Orient.
A human person in the last 6 months to me said Oriental as it relates to an Asian person. And I'm like, bro, what in the hell are you saying? Like, that is inappropriate.
Yeah.
Like, also, what is this, 1953? Like, what? You're a 40-year-old. What's happening here? And I was like, I don't think we use that term anymore.
Dude. I know.
He's like, really? And I'm like, yes, really.
Yeah, people's sensitivities change. You know, my father.
He was just unaware. And I'm like, dude.
My father would always have an expression that he would say with not a racist bone in his body that went as follows. How much rice can a Chinaman eat?
Oh, what's that have to do with the price of tea in China, Glenn Sr.? Another one. Same thing.
Yeah, there's another one there. But okay, so Chinaman was at one time not verboten. And the notion of the concept of the phrase was essentially, if you have so much of something, how much more do you want? You know, so how much rice could a Chinaman eat? Well, you know, the sensitivities changed along the way. I think I might have said that on the air once in the early aughts, 2000, before social media could erupt and ruin your career.
Thank God.
I know. And they're like, oh, you probably shouldn't say that.
Well, how about RG3? Did you hear RG3 the other night?
The RG3 thing is gobsmacking to me that either
he doesn't know what he's saying. He didn't know what he was saying.
He didn't know Gabu was a slur.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, then he's not as smart as he thinks.
No, he is. I mean, he got all of us, you know, 11 years ago.
I know.
So well spoken and just charismatic and he thought bright. I mean, anyway.
So anyway, as far as the NBA franchise valuations, China
and Europe, because it's, this is, you know, common answer, but football players' heads are buried in helmets, basketball players are not. They're very marketable. Going back to streaming, these games are watched and consumed and bought sneakers and jerseys like crazy in Europe and overseas and in China. They're making so much money overseas on merch and games and streaming, you can't believe. Now, do I think that Phoenix Suns, so go the Phoenix Suns, as do the Denver Broncos? No chance. Some dude who owns some mortgage shops and the Walton family, like, this doesn't add up. Like, the numbers don't seem to be the same, but you know, if I were to guess, China.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And that's why they bent the knee to China during the whole Daryl Morey controversy and everything else, because it's a league that has essentially been captured by the Chinese government. The league is a captured entity that has to exist with China, but it probably will be a great investment for old Matt Ishbia when it's all said and done. Son of a bitch.
I guess.
$4 billion. Real quick, I got a couple minutes left and then we're going to wrap it. What else was hot on your mind this week?
Well, I have two girls. You have two girls. We're girl dads.
Mm-hmm.
I love girls. By the way, I think the women's U.S. national soccer team, this is where we're going, very attractive. I love athletic chicks. I played soccer my whole life. Like,
I do too.
Trying to hit on the soccer girls, like, that was a thing.
If a cute girl is athletic, the athleticism adds another couple points of attractiveness.
If not more. Plus, you know, the legs and the tushies, and it's fantastic. And I want the women's national team to be as successful as possible, and I want them to have as lucrative jobs as possible.
Here it comes, people. Can you hear it coming? Can you hear the train? Can you hear the butt? Can you hear the butt train? Coming down the tracks. Here it comes.
I'll give you the butt. But, you know, I'll tell you, I just finished reading a book that people have probably read when they were kids, Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, right? And it's really a book about socialism, okay? And Taggart Railroad and train and all this. And I was reading it, and I finished it prior to the World Cup. But when the men won and the women got $380,000 because the men won, I'm like, we are living in a socialist society. There are two, and we all, and I'm not political at all, and I know this sounds political. There are two different topics happening. Do the women need to get paid more? Fine. Yes, let's agree to that. Why do they get paid more when somebody else is successful? It doesn't make any sense. Why are Why does one get rewarded based on the merits of another? That doesn't make sense. That's not how we should train our kids and our society. If the women should make more money, they should negotiate. We as a society, whatever, the U.S. national team in general, men, women, agnostic, should design a percentage that goes to the women commensurate to what that program brings in. If they need more money, give them a higher percentage. But based merit, being rewarded based on somebody else's merit doesn't make us win long-term as a society. It's mashugana.
It's crazy, Glenn, but the men agreed to it for one simple reason.
They would get crushed if they said no.
Exactly. None of them wanted to stand up and take the smoke that they would get.
You know what? I'm happy to support the women's national team. I want them to make more money, equal all that. That's fine. But it shouldn't be based on the men doing anything.
But that's okay.
If the men lose, why do the women lose?
Okay,
it doesn't make any sense.
Here's the reason why. It's very simple. That's where the money is. Just like the old line about Willie.
Just give it to them. Don't make it on merit. If the men lose, then the women lose. Then everyone loses. What are you talking? It's stupid. They need to be separate. The women should get paid more. Great. Pay them more. It shouldn't be based on the merit of anybody else. It's ridiculous. And if those anybody else's don't achieve, then everyone's a loser. Then what are we talking about? Then the women get nothing too. It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
Well,
and we're setting ourselves up for failure when we teach our people this.
Born in 1901, Willie Sutton had become one of the first top 10 fugitives on the FBI's list because he was a serial bank robber. And when asked, why do you rob banks? He said, and I quote, because that's where the money is. And it's a brilliant line. And so when you ask why did the women's team, you know, take the money from the men, because that's the only place the money is, that the only commonality between the women's team and the men's team is the flag on their jerseys. There's no money in the women's game, not relative to the men whatsoever. And so therefore, if they're going to get the money, U.S. Soccer as a federation didn't have all this money to make the pay equal just because the women wouldn't shut up about it. They had to go find it somewhere. And the only place to find it was on the men's side of the ledger. And the men were too cowardly to stand up and go, this is bullshit.
Listen, I get that. But see, that's not my argument. If the argument is the greater U.S. Soccer Federation has X amount of dollars and we're going to divvy it out equal, great. That's fine. And that was negotiated behind the scenes.
You just don't like the fact that the women could actually lose if the men have a shitty World Cup or don't qualify like they did 4 years ago.
Correct. Or that their compensation is in any way tied, at least publicly, to the merits of somebody else. It doesn't teach us to achieve on our own. It teaches us to ask somebody else for what we didn't earn.
Listen, you're not wrong. But we're so past that, Glenn. We could do a whole podcast on how fucked up everything is. Our goddamn Congress is going to push through $1.7 trillion 3 days before Christmas on a 4,491-page bill that none of them have read that has all kinds of bullshit in it. It's all beyond ridiculous. I wish it weren't, Glenn, but it is, my friend.
Look, I'm all for more money, but it shouldn't be based on the merit of somebody else. Based on your own merit.
How much money will you spend on your girls for Christmas? All the money, right? Because they're sweet little girls and that's what you do.
Yeah.
I'm jealous despite the fact it's a lot of work and a lot of headache and stress.
Oh, my God.
I see your little girls and I say to myself, man, do I miss those days when my girls were young. So cherish
it. Trade you.
We'll work on that. Future picks, maybe avoidable year in there. I don't know. I'll come babysit them. All right, buddy.
Okay.
Good to talk to you.
Say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Brother. See you, Glenn. Thanks. I'll end on this. Yes, there will be a subscriber edition of the Zabecast tomorrow, Friday the 23rd. There will be a short subscriber edition Monday the 26th. And then I'll take the middle of the week off and I will do a subscriber edition next Friday in advance of week 17 in the NFL. Yes, even yours truly needs a few days off. But I'll finish with what I consider my three essential Christmas songs. Not necessarily my top three or even my favorite three or the best three. That's all, you know, a different way to look at it. I look at essential songs as I want one. If I'm only picking three, I'm going to pick one from each category that I look at the holiday in. One would be Andy Williams' Most Wonderful Time of the Year. That is an upbeat banger that describes this sort of vibe of Christmas. Then I would do Hark the Herald Angels Sing, which is a song that obviously ends most Christmas services, and you march out into the crisp Christmas Eve air with that song ringing in your ears, and it's a beautiful thing. It ends Charlie Brown Christmas, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. And then this one, The Christmas Song. Great, simple title. Really know how to fly. Sung by the great Nat King Cole, but written by Mel Torme back in the mid-40s. Mel Torme was known as the Velvet Fog for his incredible voice. They gave it to Nat King Cole and said, here, you should sing this. He did, over the objections of his label, believe it or not, and it became a monster hit. They added a string accompaniment, which you hear here, that obviously makes it, but man, what a song, huh? Little piano interlude. It's a 3-minute and 10-second song. That's it. But it's got all the feels, if you ask me, especially the way it ends up winding up. The Christmas Song, Nat King Cole version. It's been covered a million times by a million artists. You may have your favorite one, but this is the OG GOAT. So let's just soak it in.
And so I'm offering the simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to
that is perfection right there. For my freeloaders who do not subscribe, Merry Christmas. And for you subscribers, I'll see you tomorrow. Make March Madness a moneymaker with MyBookie. Getting started is easy. Visit MyBookie online and use promo code ZABE to receive a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Grab your extra funds now and for a limited time, claim a free entry into the $150,000 MyBookie Madness Bracket Contest for a chance at the big money. If you're the type of guy who likes to fill out multiple brackets to get an advantage, you can do that too. The price of entry is less than an Uber, all for a shot at life-changing amounts of moolah. With so many brands to choose from, you need a platform that makes it simple to bet and simple to win and simple to get paid, like MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.